With that, I'd like to start by just giving you a summary of the topics that we'll address this morning. Each of our esteemed panelists has been asked to consider the following questions. One, what is the impact of the health information technology for economic and clinical health, or also known as the HITECH Act, on public health? And the second one is the role of informatics in H1N1 response. So this morning, we're going to hear from Dr. Tiz Boerma. Dr. Boerma, who is sitting here just at my left, is the World Health Organization's Director of Measurement and Health Information Systems. He has 20 years of experience working in public health and research programs in developing countries, including 10 years at national and district levels in Africa. He has worked for different United Nations bilateral donors, national governments, and research institutions, and has published extensively on AIDS, maternal and child health, in epidemiological, demographic, and public health journals. To Dr. Boerma's immediate left is Dr. Marcus Cheatham, and Dr. Cheatham is the Assistant Deputy Health Officer and Public Health Information Officer at the Ingham County Health Department, which serves Lansing, Michigan's capital city. In that role, he acts as informaticist for the department and is the department's liaison to the Mid-Michigan's Capital Area Regional Health Information Organization, CARIO. Dr. Cheatham has served on the RIO's Operations Committee, Privacy and Security Committee, and Quality Improvement Committee. He is also currently chair of NACHO's Informatics Workgroup. And previously, he was health analyst leading research projects in chronic disease risk in Mid-Michigan and developing web-based reporting tools. Before coming to public health, Marcus was survey director at the Institute for Public Policy and Social Research at Michigan State University. Now, to Dr. Cheatham's immediate left is Dr. William Hacker. Dr. Hacker is the commissioner of the Kentucky Department of Public Health, as well as the appointed acting undersecretary for health for the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. Prior to these roles, Dr. Thacker was the acting director of the Division of Laboratory Services, the branch manager of the newly formed Public Health Preparedness Branch, and physician consultant in the Department for Public Health. Dr. Hacker is board certified by the American Board of Pediatrics and is a fellow in the American Academy of Pediatrics. He is also a certified physician executive and is a member of the American College of Physician Executives. He holds an appointment at the University of Kentucky College of Medicine as an associate and clinical professor in the Department of Pediatrics and associate clinical professor in the University of Kentucky College of Public Health. And then finally, all the way to the right is Dr. David Hunt. Dr. Hunt is chief medical officer in the Office of Health IT Adoption for the Office of the National Coordinator for Health Information Technology, also known as ONC. Dr. Hunt is within the Department of the Health and Human Services. At ONC, he merges years of as practicing surgeon and leader in surgical quality and patient safety with hands-on experience at all levels of information technology, from programmer to systems analyst and software developer. Working at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services from 2002 through 2007, Dr. Hunt led the Medicare Patient Safety Monitoring System, as well as the Surgical Care Improvement Partnership, two national programs that advance quality improvement and patient safety. Dr. Hunt, who is licensed to practice medicine in the District of Columbia, is certified by the American Board of Surgery and has been a fellow of the American College of Surgeons since 1993. Practicing surgery in both private and academic settings, Dr. Hunt served as a clinical assistant professor of surgery at Howard University, as well as chair of surgical peer review at various hospitals in the Washington metropolitan area. So please, let us welcome our esteemed panelists and let us begin our first topic. Dr. Hunt. Dr. Hunt, can you please begin by addressing the impact of the HITECH Act on public health?
Well, definitely. Thank you very much, and I want to thank everyone for the invitation to come and speak. We often say in ONC that we'll really see the full flower of the potential of health IT in the public health sector. Primarily because we'll have the opportunity to collate, to analyze, to acquire much more information at a very, very low level, by the low level at the tip of the spear, if you would, at patient care level. In addition, the expectation is that we'll have greater coordination of care. Now, obviously, coordination of care within providers that are managing individual patients is good, but we also believe that we'll be able to see coordination of care across institutions, and primarily institutions of public health at the local, at the county level, as well as at the state level, and will roll up at the national level. At the tip of the spear, as I mentioned before, I think one thing to point out is that we won't really see, or our ability to see, the full potential will really come when we have a significantly large critical mass of practitioners that actually have integrated health IT that's interoperable. So much of our activity and much of our work in the early phase of the execution of HITECH is actually involved with seeing the deployment at a very, very low level at the practice level. And when we see that, we believe that there'll be changes, obviously, in workflow. We often think of HITECH as a prelude, hopefully, to health IT, to health reform in general. So the expectation will be that there'll be some efficiencies in the delivery of healthcare services. And what type of efficiencies that we would see that might impact public health? One that I like to bring up a lot of times, actually, with pediatrics, the full-fledged institution of a good electronic health record will allow the pediatrician, say, to see in advance of the morning appointments all the patients that will be coming that will need vaccines, that vaccinations, whether they're there for vaccination or not. In addition, well-integrated health IT will also be able to point out all of the siblings that might tag along with the parents, that with mom or dad, that come to see that. So they'll be able to get a full, a higher rate of vaccinations within the community. Finally, we expect that the HITECH Act has a fair amount of other provisions, one of the most important being with workforce. The expectation is that even if everyone today decided that we need to make sure that we buy into the full health IT agenda as we envision it, there's an obvious problem in that we have a paucity of folks who are actually able to deploy and use this. There's a significant amount of training that needs to be involved. There's a tremendous amount of technical expertise that has to come to play. And the expectation is that with the resources provision in HITECH, that there will be programs that will increase the number of workers that are able to actually help implement that, and not just in the private sector. The expectation is that the workforce will also increase in the public sector, in the public health sector. finally, I would say that there is going to be a tremendous capacity to increase the number of standards that we have, standards with regard to labs, standards with regard to any number of interoperable variables, which means that we really will, as I mentioned in the first portion, we really will be able to acquire, collate, and analyze the data that we really need to make really useful decisions at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level regarding the overall health of the community.
Thank you. Dr. Hacker, from the state level, could you please address that question as well?
And again, thank you for inviting me to participate this morning. I have two hats. I wear the hat of, I'm the chair of the ASTO's eHealth Policy Group. I'm the co-chair of the Joint Public Health Information Task Force, which is a relatively new coalition of the seven organizations that deal primarily with public health issues. Lab and epidemiology and data and others. So both perspectives. I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning. HITECH provides a tremendous opportunity for public health at the state level. And I'll talk about from my remarks focusing more on the state level. But I began my career as a private practicing pediatrician. For many years, I was in rural Southeast Kentucky doing primary care pediatrics. And in my practice, I could see today with the HITECH funds coming, electronic medical records, those regional centers to help me to get in private practice, make wise decisions in investing and being able to track the data that Dr. Hunt just talked about in terms of improving quality of care, efficiency of my practice. Today, in my practice, I have 4 million patients in my practice. That's everyone who lives in Kentucky and all the visitors who pass through Kentucky on a daily basis. So in private practice pediatrics, I was looking at my patients, but not the population. As the state health official, obviously I have the entire state to look at. So what HITECH does is provides the opportunity, and I want to stress opportunity, for me to get the reports I need, the data I need, to be able to look at how well are we doing with our public health programming, as well as coordination of care from a collection of physicians within a community or a subcommunity, what different populations are doing well, who needs more attention, how do we better market and focus our services from the public health messaging point of view as well as the clinical interventions. But public health is frequently seen as a receiver of those reports from the private sector, but we also are a provider of services. And I'll let Marcus talk more about those clinical services because primarily that's at the frontline local health department. But even at the State Department of Public Health, I provide services. I have the State Public Health Laboratory that provides laboratory testing for newborn screening. So we're not a passive receiver to do the analysis. We are also a contributor to that system of care. Now, with HITECH, the opportunity is there. Unfortunately, it doesn't clearly delineate what is the funding going to be available for public health, both at the state level or at the local level, to be able to really connect and be able to maximize the opportunity that's coming. Workforce development. Universities need to be incentivized to do certificate training for the current adult workforces working in public health but need additional training to be able to really take advantage of the technologies that are out there. And then of course have the pipeline of young graduates who will be receiving training in public health informatics as a subspecialty of their own training. Within the world of Kentucky, I need data, I need more accurate, more timely reporting, and I need a workforce to be able to do that, and I need the technology to do that, and I don't have the funds for any of those. So I do say the opportunity is there. I would request that people be aware of the needs that we have in the public health sector as critically important to be able to, for public health to carry its fair share of the load of where the administration and the country really wants to go. That's a healthier United States of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Hacker. Dr. Cheatham?
Yes, I'd like to start by welcoming you all here, and thanks for inviting me. Good morning to my co-panelists. I'm going to be speaking strictly from the local level. I work in a local health department. I often don't know what's going on in CDC or ONC, but I think the local level is critically important because that's really where care is delivered. That's where preventive services are really delivered. And so I'm going to be talking about things from that perspective. I'd also like to just tell those of you who are here, in case you don't know, partners in the Public Health Information Network have been very much involved in influencing what was in high tech and in defining what meaningful use is for physicians who want to receive stimulus payments for the adoption of electronic medical records. I'd like to compliment ONC. They've made a huge effort to be inclusive. But if you saw the plenary session yesterday, on the podium was Lynn Gibbs Scharf, Dave Ross, and Seth Foldy, and they've been personally involved in shaping this legislation. And that's a tremendous achievement for all of us who are here, that we've been able to have that kind of impact. That having been said, sometimes when you treat a patient, you do all that you can, you consult, you're absolutely certain that you've got the treatment right, and then the test results come back and you find out you need to fine-tune things. In some of the sessions that I've been in, people have been talking about perhaps a little bit of a misalignment of incentives. And what I'm thinking about is partly what Dr. Hacker addressed. High tech is really focusing on EMR adoption. And for electronic medical records to be maximally useful, we all understand that there really needs to be exchange between electronic medical records and the rest of the care and prevention community, and that includes public health. One of the things that I've learned at this meeting is that in many places these incentives seem to be working. I understand at the Indiana Health Information Exchange, the care community's coming to the exchange and asking, can you help us meet meaningful use? We really want to be able to exchange. We're putting in these EMR systems, but to achieve those stimulus dollars or to really achieve maximum benefit to the community, we need to start exchanging. And of course, IHI has been out there for years and is ready to help the care community accomplish that. In Michigan, we're seeing something different, where the possibility of health information exchange is not as evolved in Michigan. And part of the reaction of the healthcare community seems to be to sort of say, okay, how can we expand our EMR networks as rapidly as possible so that we control or influence as the maximum number of physicians who are likely to get stimulus dollars. And at least some of the actors in the care community seem to believe that government is going to take care of the interoperability and the exchange issue. They seem to know how bad we want it to happen, and they seem to be willing to call our bluff on that. We'll see what happens right now. The Michigan Health Information Network is meeting with healthcare leaders and trying to explain to them that the greatest good for the community can be achieved if we build interoperability in right from the beginning. And so what about this misalignment of incentives? I would just encourage all of us to really think about how in our communities can we influence how the exchange centers that are going to be rolled out, the $500 million, how that money is going to be allocated. Will it be strictly for EMRs, or will there be something for interoperability and public health? And then when states receive HIE dollars, how can they maximally use that money so that the health of the public, broadly speaking, is truly truly benefited? High tech is an amazing thing. It's done a world of good for public health, and all I'm arguing is that we need to do a little bit more to fine-tune it and make it as good as possible.
That's a great observation, Dr. Cheatham, and I'd like to give Dr. Hunt and other panelists the opportunity to address that. But before we do that, we'd like to hear from Dr. Boyarma. Dr. Boyarma?
Thank you very much for giving me a chance to speak in this truly global setting here, in this massive hall. I would like to give a little bit of context on WHO's approach to the field of health informatics and information before getting to the specific question. WHO's work builds upon its core mandate and functions and decades of experience in health information including the setting of standards, the country technical support, and the monitoring of situation and trends. And in that context, we focus on three strategic directions: standards, solutions, and scaling up. In the field of standards, WHO aims to facilitate work on health information standards and promote their use. One example is a global indicator and metadata registry, which, as you know, tries to make sense out of the thousands of indicators that are out there with different names, different computation methods, and so on. And within that, create a core set that could also guide developments in informatics. It also means providing guidance to countries in terms of implementing interoperability standards and related issues, because the field is, particularly in low-income countries, very complex, perhaps not unlike what's happening in the US, but at the last World Health Assembly, a permanent secretary of a small country in East Africa came to us to say, well, they have a fragmented health information system, and they were completely overrun by vendors with products that try to wall off their markets and sell products that don't promote data sharing. So WHO and Health Metrics Network were sort of asked to help the countries with a response to that. So this is something that's going to happen soon. The second area around solutions, trying to catalyze and leverage the development of innovative solutions, tools, and methodologies. Again, together with Health Metrics Network, WHO is working on a starter suite of interoperable tools for public health, including tools to support patient care and facility management, district health information, and remote field data collection. This also, as an example, includes public health observatories, data warehouse and portals enabling different groups to share a common platform for their data with common tools to communicate data and results. And we're working closely also with CDC on trying to develop a global health observatory. And the third dimension or direction is around scaling up, convening and working with collaborative communities and networks to strengthen country-level capacities in health informatics. WHO collaborating centers are a very important way for us to mobilize expertise in this field and strengthen country capacity. Lead institutes in US and Europe are currently brainstorming with us how to do this best. CDC is on its way or almost there to be a collaborating center. But we're also, for instance, talking to China Ministry of Health Center for Health Statistics and Informatics, where there's also a $2 billion investment in informatics every year at the moment. Now, to come to the question on the HITECH Act and its potential impact on public health, well, as we heard from the three previous speakers, it clearly has a national focus and it has an electronic health record healthcare focus. But what we hope is that there will be some global spillover effects of this very large investment and that they will spill over in public health. And there are three points I'd like to raise building on what I said earlier. First, we hope that there'll be an effect on health information standards and tools, that the US developments will lead to improvements in several critical areas, in the area of ontologies, terminologies, and classifications, related to SNOMED CT, but also International Classification of Diseases, the ICD, the ICF, that there will be more effective guidance and tools for better interoperability, that also will have a spillover to the global community, and standards and tools for health records, which at the moment is very diverse. The second spillover effect that we hope will be there is, and I think it was also mentioned by the previous speakers, is the link between the healthcare information and public health and public health surveillance. We hope that these investments can show the way in which the electronic health record developments and so on can lead to better quality data relevant for public health, more complete data. I think the first speaker mentioned the critical mass, more accurate data, comparable data, and timely, and how these data can contribute to public health surveillance at district, regional, and global levels. We expect developments in around data warehouses or grid-like applications, which I think these investments should help. And lastly, I think, is around evaluation of what's worked. The health information technology interventions are relatively new. The body of evidence of what's working is very thin at best. And often evaluation comes as an afterthought, but I would hope that these large investments will be combined with evaluation investments now, evaluation of costs, evaluation of the effects of volume of data. We undoubtedly will get more, but particularly quality of data, the impact on health decision making in the short run, but particularly in the mid to long run, because with innovations, we're almost sure there'll be a substantial Hawthorne effect, and the impact on health. I think that is very difficult to measure. We haven't really nailed it down with health information for the past decades, but these are, of course, very critical investments. And so I hope that CDC, PEPFAR, USAID can play that critical role between the HITECH Act and the global community. Thank you.
Thank you. As a follow-up, Dr. Hunt, so Dr. Boerma, Dr. Hacker, and Dr. Cheatham have really got it to the crust of how do we get investment beyond just clinical prevention to ensure that the public health community is eligible and is a full partner, stakeholder, in these health IT funding, the regional technical assistance centers. How do we do that?
Well, the first thing is I'll give a plug for our website, healthit.hhs.gov, and I encourage everyone to sign up. There's a link to the listserv there, so as funding announcements and opportunities for resources become available, you'll be able to keep abreast of everything in a very, very short time course. The I think that one thing that I did gloss over and I should have highlighted in my earlier response also is that the other speakers were exactly correct, that the immediate focus for the work of ONC is with the introduction, implementation, and successful deployment of electronic health records. But the expectation is that once we have many of those vehicles, those funding and resource vehicles actually implemented, that the work of the Policy Council, which is discussed in HITECH, will begin to be able to focus on other things and to broaden the view and the landscape, including public health. I would also say that the other, I think Dr. Cheatham brought up, probably the most important aspect of health IT and the thing that is permeated throughout all of HITECH, particularly in the meaningful use section, is the incredible importance of exchange. Mm-hmm. Having silos of high technology that don't exchange information is of absolutely no use, and we would be considered, I think, pretty unequivocally a failure if we weren't able to really manifest true, robust, full-fledged exchange of information at any number of levels. So it's no, secret that two out of the three examples in the HITECH Act, in the meaningful use sections that talk about what would some of the legislature's ideas of what meaningful use might be, include the exchange of information. And finally, I would like to say that one very, very big opportunity that I hope that everyone takes advantage of, again, through looking at in our website at the opportunities for meetings, is interaction with the standards panel, the health IT standards panel. We have two policy council. We have two advisory committees that were set up through HITECH. One is the policy council, the other is the standards council and the standards committee. And it is very, very important that their work continues. One thing that I glossed over, actually didn't even bring up in terms of standards. Often we think about standards as far as being able to share lab data or a clinical consult, but one very, very important aspect of standards involves the most fundamental thing that has to be accomplished, and that is standards and policies around security. I mentioned that the most important thing for all of this to be seen as successful will be for there to be exchange, and there cannot be any meaningful exchange that occurs if we don't have adequate policies and infrastructure in place around security. So I would encourage everyone to, as much as possible and as much as their capacity allows, to begin to engage and discuss and join in the larger discussion on security policies, because again, that really is the foundation of all of this work.
And Dr. Hart, how should the public health community — we have representatives from the Joint Public Health Informatics Task Force on this panel, and also international representatives — What are the gateways for public health involvement that are currently available? You mentioned the standards panel. What opportunities are coming up for engagement?
Well, both the standards and the policy council have monthly meetings, and again, I encourage all of you to — there are webcasts, and there's opportunity for a review of the minutes and a review of the agenda, so you can see what's coming up. Also, it's very important that you begin — if you see the agendas that come up, there'll be opportunities for a number of different organizations to provide testimony and provide input to those panels. But it's also very important that you continue to work through the current institutions and organizations that you're currently allied with. That is, the CDC obviously has a very, very big place at the table in terms of the discussions within our department on what needs to be done. The state and local public health services, in as much as they're in part represented through the CDC, but also through organizations such as the National Governors Association, the NGA — I may have the acronym incorrect — we're constantly in contact with them. So I think to continue to make sure that the important issues are being discussed at the institutions that you're currently in, and to continue to have that information flow to us at the national level is incredibly important. And again, I would definitely encourage everyone to visit our website, sign up to the listserv, where I think most of you may be aware of the larger funding opportunities, announcements of funding opportunities that came out recently within the last couple of weeks that were announced by the Vice President, namely the high-tech extension centers and the grants for health information exchange. But that was really just the beginning, and that really is just setting the stage to let everyone know that we at ONC are here, and the new ONC is open for business. There are going to be a number of other opportunities, and I can't speak out of school, and before they're actually ready to be announced, but it's very, very important that all of you, as much as possible, keep abreast of the additional work that will be coming out.
Great. So, Dr. Hacker, Dr. Cheatham, and Dr. Buerma, any additional key messages or thoughts that you'd like to leave with the audience before we move on to the second topic with regard to the HITECH Act and its impact on public health?
I want to thank David for making the comments about the standards panel as well as the policy group. Our Joint Public Health Information Task Force did submit correspondence and recommendations, actually some nominations to those different bodies, and trying to represent one voice from the public health world globally or broadly, had a lot of dialogue within our JFIT structure with input from the different member organizations to say, you know, we speak, this is really important. Meaningful use needs to be bi-directional. We need to deal with immunizations and registries. We need to deal with reportable diseases, also the non-reportable diseases. So not only HIV reporting, but also maybe hemoglobin A1C. And all that stuff out there in the world that these HIEs will have and the EMRs will have buried within their computer banks. How do we get that information up to those of us in the public health arena? And so we are and have been contributing to the dialogue at the national level. And that's not to replace any single organization. So ASTO independently has the ability to respond. So does CSTE, so does NHO and the others. So I'm just taking a moment to explain a little bit more about JFIT as to the way we refer to that, because we are relatively new as a structure. But it's one other mechanism of which we can have cross-pollination between different entities, NAFSA, say PHL, et cetera, to talk about global or national issues that are impacting the e-health world. So I do appreciate what ONC is doing and receiving, and would like to look forward to having more contact with the office.
I would add something. Speaking strictly from the point of view of local public health, those of you who are in local public health know that 80% of health districts are rural or small, and consequently lacking in capacity. And one of the things that I see in Michigan that troubles me is health officers from the rural parts of the state saying, well, HIE doesn't have anything to do with me because I don't have a health center connected to my health department. I deliver only a small package of services. Little, if any of it, is clinical in nature. And that's such a mistake because it's public health's responsibility to ensure that preventive services and care are delivered properly in their communities. And the entire United States now is, you know, every square inch of it is gonna be part of some health information exchange in the future. And so those health officers really need to be participating in the conversations at the regional and state level about health information exchange and advocating and saying, as these things roll out, how are you ensuring that it's going to improve prevention and access to health care in my rural health district? That's so important. That local public health voice really needs to be there.
I just like to stress the last point I made about the global link and the importance of some kind of structural involvement and investment into agencies like CDC with its global experience, like USAID and PEPFAR, for two reasons. One, because I think it will be an important learning platform for the US, learning from mistakes from others or similar developments elsewhere. And I think it's the only way to ensure that what's going to be invested will have some public health significance for the whole world.
Wonderful, thank you. We'll now move on to our second topic, which is the role of informatics in H1N1 response. I'd like to actually start with Dr. Cheatham. What part of your information systems worked best to support the initial H1N1 response this past spring?
Well, I'm really nervous because I'm local public health, and what I'm going to talk about is a statewide system, the Michigan Care Improvement Registry, and I happen to know that Jim Collins, who works on the Michigan Disease Surveillance System for the state of Michigan, is out there somewhere, and he knows everything about the Care Improvement Registry, and so maybe he'll step to the microphone later on and correct my misstatements. What I know, I was frantically emailing earlier in the week to try to get the latest information from people at the state, and we weren't able to close the loop. So what I know comes from my immunization director, Wendy Reidenauer, who is a champion of local public health, in my opinion. The Care Improvement Registry is one of the success stories, I think, in HIE. I do not know how old it is, but it's been in operation for some time. And when it was developed with interoperability in mind. It's one of those light systems that Dr. Frieden talked about, small footprint. Actually, compared to most healthcare systems, it's an affordable thing. It really has had an amazing impact in the state of Michigan. The Care Improvement Registry is not only used to record immunizations, but also the logistics that go along with that, the vaccines. It is used at the local level by physicians and in health departments who use a web-based interface to input immunization information. That goes up to the state, and the state uses it to track immunizations. Just having data by itself does not lead to improvement in health. And so one of the things, the system is now evolved enough that it is being used so that under-immunized children can be identified. We can actually go out to those households and offer opportunities to complete immunizations to families. And it's being used as a research tool. That's really closing the loop on HIE, right? Once you've got the case data assembled, then you've got population data. And so there's a paper on the MCIR is spelled M-C-I-R, website showing that the local variation in immunization rates is correlated with the local variation in vaccine-preventable diseases. We always say it's so hard for us to demonstrate that what we do in public health makes a difference. But here's an example of something that's working. You know, the CDC taught our state officials about the importance of standards and interoperability. They implemented that in partnership with local physicians and health departments. What are your business processes? How can this tool support your work so you can be a better job? It's a real success story. So here comes H1N1, and what we're doing in Michigan with H1N1 is we are requiring people who provide the vaccine, H1N1 vaccine, to use MCIR. We've got a pretty high participation rate, but this is an opportunity. Rahm Emanuel never waste a good crisis to say, okay, all of you got to get on board now and you've got to use this system, because we have to know, are we covering the population? What are we accomplishing in terms of our immunization rates? What's the local variation? Where do we have to do better? Later, maybe we'll be able to correlate that information with the hospitalization rates and evaluate local health departments and local health officers. How good a job did you do mobilizing your workforce and getting out there and making a difference? So to me, this is a really, really exciting thing. And and the last thing I'd say about MCIR, of course, is it's interoperable. Right now, I don't think it's interoperating with any EMRs so that physicians can use their EMRs. But that is definitely the vision. It was developed with that in mind. And so maybe 5-10 years down the road, most people wouldn't be using that web-based interface. They would be using directly from, they'd be working directly from their EMRs. That's the vision, that's where we're going.
Great, thank you. Dr. Hacker.
Well, nothing like a pandemic to get a lot of folks to recognize the value of public health. So we scheduled that for y'all, so no applause, it's okay. That was what we did in Kentucky. Kentucky's decided to wait on developing HIEs until somebody gets it right, then we're gonna do whatever they did. That's not true. Obviously, we've been working at this, but I'd like to be that wise. We have one HIE area in northern Kentucky connecting in from Cincinnati, and then Louisville is getting one up and running, and then we have one in the northeast part of the state that is preliminary. So we really don't have the infrastructure that Michigan has in place. So I can't really address exactly what we have used in terms of new technology to be able to respond to the events of the last 2 or 3 months. I have Medicaid in my cabinet, so I'm not the director of Medicaid, but it's one of the sister agencies in the cabinet I'm in. So I've asked Medicaid to provide me with weekly downloads of how many tests for a rapid screening test for a flu and age and county, as well as how many are diagnosed, these are claims data, and then how many are hospitalized with that diagnosis. So I'm getting those feeds, and it's data mining that's simple. It doesn't require a lot of work, and it's not really new and fancy, but it's there. We do have some surveillance going on at the community levels and getting some feeds within those school closings and other things. And in Kentucky, and of course the state is not homogeneous, as was shown, I believe, yesterday by Dr. Frieden. We are seeing an increase, an uptick in H1N1 cases in Kentucky. Thursday of this week, in 48 hours, we have a summit, Governor's Summit. We have 1,400 people registered for that summit. We were thinking maybe 500, 600 would show, and we are now in an overflow status, and we're going to have a nightmare logistically, but I can't turn people away. And believe me, it's a challenge that I'm here today. But I'm here because this is so important, and I have a strong team back in Kentucky putting the final touches on that. What we've relied upon without the bells and whistles are emails, video conferencing with our local health departments, and then all those conference calls that the CDC has been sponsoring with ASTO and with CSTE and other organizations. That's been very helpful in the information flow, and then we turn around and send that back out And then I connect directly with the Kentucky Medical Association, with the Kentucky Hospital Association, Kentucky Primary Care Association, and we feed everything else that we get. So that's the stream, but it's old-fashioned, but that's what we deal with right now. In the future, and we certainly look forward to funding from the ONC that will help us build in place those HIEs across the state that we can have all these accurate, timely, reportable, you know, information and data, aggregate information at the community level, population level, so forth. And so I see the vision, and it certainly is exciting. Today, we're just having to do it the old-fashioned way, and it takes a lot of time.
Thank you. Dr. Hunt?
Yeah, I think that you pretty much summarized it very, very well. Time is so acute. The infrastructure that is in place right now is really what will be used to help combat an H1N1 outbreak in the next few months because, again, time is so acute. But I would say that the support for the infrastructure, much of the infrastructure that is there, did derive through some of our work before HITECH, some of the health information exchange organizations that are in place have received support from our predecessor policy councils like the American Health Information Community, et cetera. And I would say that, again, I would reiterate that this will be an opportunity to identify needs and to begin to see how we can better build out the infrastructure that will be there to be able to address and advance the technology for future outbreaks.
Dr. Boyamra.
Thank you. I'm also a little bit nervous like my colleague. Partly because I wasn't really core of the response in influenza, so I have to be careful what I'm saying. But I think actually your question was what went well, so that makes it a lot easier. So what went well concerning the role of informatics in H1N1 response with WHO? And I think our role, of course, is to track the global situation, to look at compliance with the international health regulations, so that countries really report what's going on, announce phases 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then also take global public health measures. And informatics, of course, plays a role in the collection and reporting, the compilation and analysis, and the communication of data. So with the collection and reporting, there are standards for transmission, standards for forms, particularly on the lab side. It worked very well, but of course we have a limited number of labs and they're well connected. Unfortunately, the epidemic came 3 months too early for us because we were just working on an application called Flu ID to have a weekly reporting system, which would have been very suitable. And of course, now it was developed within 3 weeks. So that's one of the good things. And so now it's ready and operating. But what happens, of course, is that you often then miss in the early stages data on age or other risk factors like concurrent diseases and so on for cases, which slow down quick decision making. I think on the collection and reporting, unmistakably, the role of the media. I think that it's enormous, that flow of information. And we do have a web crawler called GFIN and looking at all those things. But I think also in CDC, there was this, you learned about Google and CDC and who's got it first. But media, of course, has become a very important input in tracking this kind of work. Then on the compilation and analysis, in 2004, a strategic health operations center was built at WHO. Following the SARS outbreak, and an event management system was set up, and which is sort of a comprehensive system with database on epidemiological intelligence, tracking disease history and decisions, management logistics and response, good links to international expert networks, etc. So that really enabled us to do what we did, but at the same time, there was also a struggle with spreadsheets, because which often seem to be in the acute phases what we're turning to, an Excel spreadsheet. And there were three different streams of data, the media, country reporting, another stream. And to reconcile that, it took an effort to actually, it hadn't been all, put in a protocol, and to get that right was another thing that is now in good shape. And then the communication, of course, the communication was I think, a major aspect. Within a week or so, a tent half the size of this hall was put up on our parking lot for the press. There was a constant briefings all the time. I think rarely the world has been so involved in an outbreak of a disease. Tracking cases in countries, three countries in Germany, one over there. The WHO provided much of the data, although sometimes they came into the press before that. Many agencies put up interactive maps. We were quite late in that, particularly for geopolitical reasons that we sometimes struggle where to put the boundaries and so on. That had nothing to do with the epidemic itself. But that, I think, is an important thing. So the main gains right now are that it really accelerated various developments, which put her now again in a stronger position if much more is needed. But there's one major gap that I'd like to point out, and that's on data on the response capacity. Fortunately, most of the outbreak was in North America, where there are good data on, say, IHR standards around laboratory, around information systems, know where the beds and the health workers are, the drugs, vaccination coverage, intensive care provision, but also and risk populations like immunocompromised people. But that, of course, in 49 low-income countries have been identified for this, is not available in many other countries at all. So now there is a phase ongoing to try to actually map their response capacity much better in this field. And we heard very little about the epidemic in Africa, hopefully because there wasn't any. But I think around in the cities and so on, we still don't have a good picture what their surveillance and response capacity is. So that is one dimension. And informatics, of course, can play a key role in rapid data collection with PDAs and setting up databases and so on. So that's only starting now, but it's an important task in response.
Ms. Rogers, may I speak out of turn?
Yeah.
Regarding the Care Improvement Registry in Michigan, it illustrates the challenges that we're facing in the face of, you know, the global economic downturn, the challenges to our capacity. Everybody here from public health, state and local public health, you're experiencing budget cuts, layoffs. One of the things about the Care Improvement Registry, I crowed about it so much, and yet in the last budget cycle in the state of Michigan, it was one of the things the legislature thought about defunding. We can say, well, thank goodness for H1N1, it saved the Care Improvement Registry, but something else vital is, because Michigan is one of those states with a structural budget deficit, something else vital is going to be cut. And so this is just really an illustration of the challenges we're facing in informatics. We see the possibilities, and yet in the midst of this crisis, it's so hard to find the policy solutions that we need to go forward. Hence the importance of high tech.
Any further response from the panelists regarding this question? If not, we'll open up to questions and answers. You have a question?
I'm Bob Harmon from the Duval County Health Department in Jacksonville, Florida. I have a question for Dr. Borma. Can you mention any examples of developed countries in Europe or elsewhere which have electronic health records, exchange, and the kind of things we're pursuing in the U.S. That we might be able to model after?
Well, I think a year or and a half ago or so, I read a study of the Commonwealth Foundation, which had as one of the indicators the use of electronic health records by physicians And it was really striking how low it was in the US compared to many European countries. So over 80% is nothing uncommon there. So a lot of doctors use electronic health records. From the countries that I know well, though, there are similar problems as to for interoperability. There are many countries who have invested billions of dollars in this, for instance, the UK, and haven't really found a solution yet. So I guess one of the problems is that they're also dealing with doctors, just like here. But they have been quite successful in getting high levels of use. The interoperability issue hasn't been solved yet, but...
I think we have another question here.
Good morning, and I'm Dale Alverson from New Mexico, and I appreciate the panel being here to talk about high tech and the stimulus package. And I really want to direct this to Dr. Hunt. From the standpoint of what's happening with the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act and high tech, there are a number of programs that are coming forward very, very quickly. To name a few, I think most are aware of, Department of Commerce, NTIA, and the BTOP program, USDA, RUS, and the BIP program. And then FCC is beginning to look at strategies for enhancing broadband across the country. And of course, this impacts health information exchange, telemedicine, and so on. So my question is, what is underway to enhance coordination between these different programs that we're all beginning to look at? In a sense, many of us see this as a wonderful opportunity, but our heads spinning, trying to determine how we can quickly respond and take advantage of these programs down at the local level.
Well, the C in ONC is actually coordination, and we actually have begun. You're absolutely right. There are a number of programs that are beginning through the Recovery Act that we are working with other departments and other agencies with. A few that come to mind are including the Veterans Health Administration, the Department of Defense working with their VLER program, I think it's the Virtual Lifetime Electronic Record program for the active duty soldiers. You did mention the FCC. There is someone at ONC that is currently working or trying to coordinate and working with each and as many of those programs as possible. One thing that is a little bit of an embarrassment of riches, as they say, that we're in the process of actually expanding our staff because there is a very acute need to have more robust and more full-fledged coordination for exactly, as you say, programs such as the FCC program. One thing that we've been able to identify is that if meaningful use is actually a huge driver for a lot of our work, and obviously electronic prescribing is one big component that is being considered for meaningful use, but e-prescribing without broadband, without any type of high-speed internet access is very, very frustrating at best. So one of the things that we're doing is working as closely as possible with the FCC to begin to coordinate where broadband is and where it is not, and to hopefully begin to target resources and work in concert with them in terms of actually being able to increase capacity. One final thing that I didn't mention, and actually is a string that can run through all of the questions that have already been discussed here, is the issue of comparative effectiveness research. I was fortunate enough to be selected to serve on the Federal Coordinating Council for comparative effectiveness research. And I think out of all of the things that come out of the Recovery Act, and obviously I'm very enamored with the resources that have been brought through high tech, but the comparative effectiveness research, I think, has the greatest potential for actually advancing the quality of care throughout the nation, and that has to do with from the public health perspective, as well as just the individual and personalized care. So we are working as closely as we can with all of the departments and agencies that are relevant, and one of the big things that we're actively doing now, it's a little bit is staffing up. It's a little bit like changing the tires on a moving car. So as we're advancing things right now, we're actually having to staff up because we do need more coordination and more fulfilling coordination. One thing that we do have and we can continue to run is a federal policy council, not to be confused with the health IT policy council that was discussed in high tech. But in that council, members from across the federal spectrum actually sit down on usually a biweekly, sometimes monthly basis to discuss different aspects that are relevant, and we hopefully help coordinate through that also.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. We have a question here.
Yeah, good morning. I'm Kamal Gella from Concurrent Technologies out of Johnstown, Pennsylvania. And what I'm noticing in Western Pennsylvania is you have different hospitals picking different EMR solutions, and interoperability could be a big issue, because if you have patients in one hospital moving to a different region and they want to take their EMR medical records, so the other hospital could be using a different solution altogether. So how do you standardize the EMR? Or interoperability is a big issue. So could you, this is for Dr. Hunt, if you can just answer.
Sure, I hope I don't get all the love here. your point is very valid, and actually it is a huge component of the work that we're currently doing, that we were doing well before high tech and are moving forward. The big emphasis in this question would be on the use of a certified electronic health record. Many of you may be familiar with the work of CCHIT, the Certification Commission for Health IT, that was basically set up over the previous years to begin to define what a certified record is, and thereby, by extension of that, allow them to different vendors' certified health records to begin to use information interoperably and together. High tech actually advanced that even a step further in that greater control over what it is to be a certified record is being vested back in the Office of the National Coordinator. So at the end of this year, probably around December or so, we will release a regulation basically outlining what a certified health record is, and that will be for the immediate purposes of meaningful use, which is the driver, the wedge that we're using to actually advance all of this. And through subsequent years, we'll continue to, at one central coordinated place, begin to make very, very clear what the definition of a certified health record is that will qualify for meaningful use, and hopefully that will eliminate much, but not all, much of the problems as far as interoperability.
Okay, we have a question here.
Hi, my name is Christopher Bailey from the World Health Organization. I have a question regarding the High Tech Act. This was associated with the stimulus package in response to the economic downturn, the global economic downturn, and naturally is focusing on stimulating commercial activity. To what degree is the public good being protected with this act, and how much of this is really focused on commercial interests? How do alternative approaches come into play, such as open source and other collective, non-proprietary solutions come into the strategy here? Thank you.
Well, I guess that's me too.
Good luck.
Yeah. I would say that the public good is actually being protected because our focus is not on the technology. even though that's what we discuss and we talk about all the time. The focus really of our whole office really is on improving the quality of care. If we have the most robust, most wonderful technology that is deployed, but we're not seeing a commensurate improvement in the quality of care, then we have failed in our primary mission. So to that end, discussions throughout the community, through a broad spectrum of not just the commercial interests and the vendors, have come into play. We have had discussions, particularly at the policy council level, with the open source community. And I believe that in the next meeting, in September's meeting, we may see, I could be incorrect, we may see testimony from the open source community on some of the discussions that are there. One of the advantages of bringing the decision of what certification means back in-house, if you would, means that the proprietary interests, which some have, and I don't think it's a fair criticism, but some have criticized CCHIT that they were largely dominated by the commercial interests. Taking that back in-house will absolutely prevent any domination from any one particular commercial interest. But I think the proof of the pudding is in the eating. If we're not able to help advance the improvement of care, not just to get health IT out there, but if care isn't improved, if the quality of care that the average American is seeing isn't improved, then it's quite easy to say that we failed.
Thank you. Gentleman on the right.
Good morning. My name is Nikolai Lipsky. I am a CDC standard interoperability lead. I'm very delighted in today's we have so many discussion about standards and interoperability. I'm sorry, again, question to Dr. Hunt. Hard working today. State, local, and federal agencies spent many years for development of measures which are healthy people 2010, healthy people 2020. So what is your vision? How we can make a bridge between patient level care to population care in terms of meaningful use matrix, etc., which mostly have measures related to patient level care?
I think the answer to that is actually in provisions in the the discussion of meaningful use in the Recovery Act itself. Part of the discussion, part of the exchange expectation is to provide information around quality of care and the measures, the quality measures that will be determined by the Secretary in close consultation with both CMS and the Office of the National Coordinator, and actually throughout the department, the AHRQ. We're going to make a set of determinations of what quality measures need to be exchanged that will constitute a provider being a meaningful user. The selection of those measures will help determine whether or not we're looking at a broad range of not just individual care, but preventative care and public health. And I think if you take a look at some of the measures that are under consideration, you'll see that there is a healthy sampling from both the aspects of individual care as well as public health. One thing that I should emphasize is, and because there have been a surprising number of discussions of what meaningful use is, one thing I find incredibly interesting is that they have whole seminars actually on what meaningful use is when we haven't defined it yet. So I really am always interested in folks who are experts on it when the primary office that is helping to coordinate it hasn't yet quite said what it is. But be that as it may, the thing I wanted to emphasize is that along with the introduction of a regulation of what is a certified health record coming out at the end of the year, we'll also see the introduction, or at least the proposed rule from CMS on what meaningful use is, and I think that you'll be pleasantly surprised in terms of the quality measures that are being considered for meaningful use. Two things with that. With the introduction of that proposed rule, that will trigger the start of a comment period. And I cannot emphasize this more. We really, really, really do take the comments that are provided through the public very, very seriously. I spent about 5 years over at CMS, and I can tell you in the federal space that every comment must be reviewed and assimilated and coordinated, and it is independent of how many comments that come in. So we really, really do take the comments seriously, and I encourage everyone, once the proposed rule comes out, and again, the link to our website, joining the listserv, will make sure that you're on the forefront of when that actually comes out, as well as obviously information through directly from CMS. But when that proposed rule comes out, we encourage everyone to weigh in. It's the beginning of a discussion that is very important. It'll be, I believe, a 60-day comment period. So please send in your comments as early as possible with that. And the next thing I want to say is that meaningful use, particularly as we are discussing it, is being structured now. Again, the final definition isn't there, but we're looking at it in terms of effectively three different periods. There'll be meaningful use for the beginning, which is 2011, but also meaningful use will not be a static definition. There'll be an improvement or an enhancement, an increase in what the definition of meaningful use is for 2013 and 2015 also. So if you don't see the quality measures that may be applicable or that you might have looked for in the 2011 definition, it will in many cases be because we don't think that there'll be the capacity in that short time frame to be able to provide that information, and the target would then be 2013 and 2015. From the federal aspect, 2011 is essentially next Thursday. It is so acute in terms of getting things in place and having things set up such that not only that individual practitioners can provide the information, but a huge piece of it is having CMS in particular have the capacity to accept that information. So while the initial recommendations may be seen as modest, look for additional enhancements for 2013 and 2015.
And I believe, Dr. Cheatham, you also had a response
to
that.
So I started off by sort of saying, hey, are you guys getting the incentives right? And now I'd like to switch sides. The previous three questions also go to the level of the health information exchange. All the Office of the National Coordinator can do is create an environment in which we can do our work. But ultimately, it comes to us to do the work. A previous questioner from your left side here said the hospital systems in our area all have fantastic EMR systems, but they're different and they can't exchange information. Well, the incentives are there for HIEs to grow, and these hospital systems can be participating in these HIEs, and unless they do that, those interfaces between their EMRs will not be constructed. So, you've got to participate in your regional health information exchange, whatever you call that, a RIO or whatever. An earlier questioner talked about, are we really considering the entire range of solutions? Well, partly that goes to the leadership of the local HIE to consider the range of solutions. In the case of the Capital Area RIO in Michigan, we ultimately went with an ASP model that provided a very light EMR light that any physician could obtain for a song and participate fully in the RIO, and of course interfaces could be built between the RIO and the EMR systems too. So we went with a non-standard solution, and I would really encourage the leadership of HIEs. We spent 18 months in our vendor selection process and scoured the whole country, and once we did that, it really took our thinking out of the box and we went with something different. And again, population health, at the levels of regions and states, the boards of directors and the bylaws and policies of your health information exchanges must not wall off the use of the data that the HIEs ultimately collect for population health. Exaggerated fears about privacy and security cause many HIEs to not do what they really need to do, which is to have as part of their business processes, as part of the package of services that they offer to their clients who participate in the HIE, is population health analysis, quality improvement. That's a big thing to bite off, but in my opinion, that's where a lot of the future revenue of HIEs is going to come from, and that's where the healthcare business, the physical science of healthcare, is going to be transformed into a health information science, a digital science, and it is up to HIEs to seize the opportunities that are out there to take that leadership and make that step. The Office of the National Coordinator can't help it if we are fearful and inward looking. They can only create the playing field, and we've got to execute the plays.
We have a question here on the left.
Thank you. First, a commercial that downstairs is the Integrating the Healthcare Enterprise Interoperability Showcase, and for about 10 years now, this international organization, IHE North America, IHE Europe, and IHE Asia and Pacific Rim, have been working on the very issue of interoperability and common interpretation of standards. So I encourage everyone to go downstairs and take a look. IHE is being looked at as being recognized by the International Standards Organization for helping with to find the answer to interoperability. It's literally downstairs one flight or around the corner. So take a look during the break. My question is, primary care is a major component of healthcare reform. Primary care is a major discussion within the ARA 8, but what we're hearing, what I've heard over the last 24 hours here at the Finn conference, is that primary care in many states is being performed by providers who are not eligible for the incentive payments. And I'd like the panel to talk about that a little bit, and particularly maybe have some of the panelists inform the representative from the federal government, the Obama administration, on what that may mean for all of us.
Dr. Hacker?
Yeah, I'll start with that one. Within Kentucky, local health departments provide a lot of clinical services, nurses doing the work, both RNs as well as ARNPs, mostly RNs. And we're doing a lot of preventive medicine, whether breast and cervical cancer screening, well child visits, smoking cessation, diet, counseling, et cetera. There are a few physicians working at local health departments in Kentucky, but not a lot. That connects to the issue of some of my comments earlier of where is the funding streams to allow and support local public health as well as state public health to participate and allow us to provide value added. I'm encouraged with what Dr. Hunt's been talking about because I'm hearing that this is an evolving process that I think that he's been very eloquent in expressing the Oxford, I think, broad vision. I appreciate that very much. But I will continue until I get my systems up and running and my funds in place to say, don't forget about public health. And Tom's point is very well made, is that we do provide, as I said earlier, a lot of clinical services, but we're not traditionally the poster child of what an EMR is supposed to be provided to. It's to Dr. Hacker, the private pediatrician, not to the local health department. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I would say also that within the context of meaningful use, remember that will be, the incentives are going to be paid out through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And the definition and basically it will be providers who bill Medicare and Medicaid as the insurance company. And the definition of who can be a meaningful user, who can be a provider that bills, is not just limited to physicians and not just limited to primary care physicians. It does include a wide range of individuals, but you're exactly correct that there has been some complaint about those providers that are not eligible for Medicare. In addition, to some categories of nurse practitioners. We've heard a great deal from the community of obstetricians, for example, and some other specialties. And the discussion is currently being at very high levels as to how will we be able to incorporate or to extend resources to those that aren't in that rather large net. But I will have to emphasize also that while the resources that we've been afforded are incredible and they are unprecedented, they are definitely finite. So when you look at a problem in our current circumstance in health IT and our current circumstance in the delivery of healthcare services, we have to hit the largest sweet spot that we possibly can. That certainly would have to include the traditional primary care providers, and I would encourage everyone to, in the ongoing discussion and debates around healthcare reform, to bring up issues that were probably tangentially addressed in the HITECH Act, to see whether or not discussions with your representatives can help bring a more inclusive and a more fulsome category of those who might be able to benefit from additional funding. But right now, part of the decision to, within the execution of our own resources, to focus on primary care is the realization that they're probably on the order of about 300,000, maybe as many as 400,000 primary care physicians in the United States. And if you divide up the resources that we have to expend among those with the HITECH Act, it's embarrassing, but the even billions of dollars actually go to relatively small levels. So I think that the current focus is on getting the largest bang, if you would, for the buck. But I do acknowledge that you're absolutely right. There are individuals who will be left out.
Thank you. We have time for a couple more questions, so we'll start here at the right.
Julia Gunn, Boston Public Health Commission. In the continuum of quality care, case management services are often needed, and particularly from local and state public health departments, we are challenged to deal with some of the most difficult and challenging orphan systems, such as tuberculosis case management and the provision of directly observed therapy, healthy baby, healthy child for women at high risk and children at high risk. These are labor-intensive and expensive systems to provide and services, though incredibly important. What are their high-tech needs, and how do they fit in with the stimulus bills?
That's me again. care coordination is obviously, I mentioned earlier that the most important thing is not that we actually deploy a lot of high tech and get a lot of geeks employed. The real measure of whether or not we are successful is whether or not we're able to improve the quality of care. The expectation is, with that, one of the huge deficits within the delivery of healthcare services in the United States is care coordination. And the expectation would be that care and case management would be a bit easier. To be quite honest, though, the focus is not necessarily the preventive services or the public health services in the immediate, is to look at the provision of individual care through providers. But the expectation is that, and I hate to use this metaphor, it's been overused, that rising tide will lift all boats, and that having information available to you through the health information exchanges will make some of that job a bit easier.
Helen, can I say something?
Yeah.
One of the concerns I have as a state health official is artificial expectations of what public health can do when the governor reads in the press that HITECH and the ARRA and all these dollars are going out there, and may read their HIEs getting established and the EMRs are being done in these regional centers,
two things. One of them is, why am I still not functioning at the level that he thinks I should, because everybody else is? And secondly is, you know, since I've already gotten that funding, public health, they don't have to use those dollars to support public health anymore, and they'll go do something else with it. Mm-hmm. And so I would request that as any communication, whether it be through the press, through the public, through NGA, so forth, highlight this is an evolving situation, and you can't solve all the issues at one time. I think the point about care management is critically important, and that's core to public health, and we do that better than anybody else. And we take care of folks who no one else wants to take care of in that setting. So we've got to get there, but I am concerned about artificial expectations and ability to deliver and loss of funding and support because they assume it's already been taken care of.
And I would also like to add, I mean, I see this as a both and, so we sort of got the three levels need to work together. In mid-Michigan, when we started working on our RIO project, we went through our 18-month vendor selection process. Part of the functionality that we told vendors, if you're going to bid on this project, you have to be able to send a portion of an electronic medical record to a public health nurse who's working under the direction of another physician. In our health centers, physicians send diabetic patients, for example, who are uninsured, for diabetes counseling and management in the local health department. You have to be able to do that if you want to bid on this project. So it came to us as the HIE to specify that functionality had to be in there. And if we didn't do that work, it wouldn't be in there, and we could yell at Dr. Hunt all we wanted, but he couldn't do anything about it. It's up to us to know what local public health needs and to tell the vendor, you must build it.
Thank you. Actually, we are running short of time, but before we close, I'd actually like to absorb our folks here and ask the question of Dr. Boerma, and that is, do you see a role for informatics and the local-to-local exchange of data across national borders, or should information always filter up and down via a country's national health organizations or even the WHO? So we've talked a lot about state, local, federal within the United States, but let's get an international perspective on this.
Yeah, I guess you're referring to it in the context of the H1N1, where actually a lot of the transmission went high over the border, from airport to airport, at least globally. But I think this has been an issue also in HIV/AIDS, where there have been a significant number of cross-border projects, because if one looks at the transmission within countries, there are huge differences, and particularly in southern Africa, provinces around the border had much higher prevalence than other provinces. So cross-border projects were there in terms of sharing data, in terms of trying to develop a response that, for instance, followed the main transport routes. I think it will not replace national reporting, because that's the only legitimate system, but I think one has to build projects on top of that to address these issues.
Thank you. And with that, please give our panelists a round of applause for their insightful comments this morning.